And you're listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And it's time right now for the Nardwuar to Human Serviette radio show. And who do we have on the line right now? Hello, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Who are you? Please identify yourself.
My name is Michael Rivero. I'm the webmaster of whatreallyhappened.com.
And, Michael, what exactly is your background? I understand you were involved with Star Trek and Stargate.
Yes, my day job, which is quite separate from my political life. I've been working in the film industry for more than 25 years now, and I work in the field of special visual effects, computer animation. Primarily right now I produce television commercials.
And you're on the line now live from, is it Hollywood, California, or is it Honolulu, California?
It's a little bit further west than Hollywood. That's all I'll say.
You are on the line live on the Nardwuar to Human Serviette radio show, and your website, again, is whatreallyhappened.com. And maybe explain a little bit to the people, what exactly is whatreallyhappened.com, and how does it rival Newsweek?
I'm not ready to say that we rival Newsweek. The website actually began about, well, a little more than 10 years ago when Clinton was still in office. And I started, quite by accident, I stumbled across some interesting information about the death of the White House Deputy Counsel, Vincent Foster. And I put it up on what was at the time my business website. And it triggered quite a strong reaction, both positive and negative. So I moved it over to its own website, which has sort of grown over the years, and a lot more information has been added to it, so that it is now, of course, the website today, whatreallyhappened.com. The principal purpose of the website is to basically go after deception by government and by corporations against the people to trick them into making decisions they otherwise would not make. And it's pretty much nonpartisan, although the Republicans assume I'm a Democrat and the Democrats assume I'm a Republican, because I tend to go after both parties with an equal amount of enthusiasm.
How many websites are there out there that do similar things? Sorry to mention this, a la Drudge Report, but like there's the Drudge Report, there's whatreallyhappened.com. Not to plug your competitors or your compatriots, but what other ones are out there? And how long has this format been around? Because it's a very interesting format, a lot of it just being links, which is really informative. Where like you're not really saying anything per se, you're just linking to other sources that are out there that are documented. What are the other ones that are out there, and how competitive is it for these link sites?
Well, first of all, there is original material at my site. I do write articles whenever time permits. So the reason for focusing on the links, however, is because websites have been sued for copying articles from other sources. So the preferred method of sharing information and referring people to information are with these links, but interspersed within them there are original articles. Now, 10 years ago when I started this, there were very, very few of these sites. Today, there are so many nobody can keep track of, and especially in the last week since the election, more and more are coming online, so it's really getting rather crowded. As far as competition is concerned, that's really not an appropriate comment, because while some of the sites are obviously commercial operations, most of the sites, and mine are included, are really being operated out of a sense of commitment to working towards a more honest and fair government, and you know, more open relationship between government and the people. So I don't think we're really in competition. I think, if anything, we link to each other's sites, and I think there's a great deal of mutual supportiveness in terms of getting the truth out on certain key issues. And I think, of course, looking back over this last year, our key victory, if you want to put it in those terms, was the fact that it did turn out that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, which was what the online blogger community had been saying all along, and the mainstream media, of course, had been saying quite the opposite, that there were all these dire weapons that we had to be afraid of and fight wars over. Now, of course, the U.S. government is officially admitting there were no banned weapons of mass destruction. Saddam was not helping al-Qaeda. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. All of these reasons and excuses for the war that is still being fought now have basically been exposed as fraud because of the online community.
Michael Rivero of whatreallyhappened.com, and we're speaking here to Michael Rivero from whatreallyhappened.com on the Nardwuar to Human Serviette radio show. If anybody has any questions for Michael, the phone number is 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. are. What I was wondering, Michael, was when you link to somebody's website, have you ever been requested not to link to them? Like, what are the rules for that? I was just thinking, like, if there's a lot of websites doing links that are, you mentioned, that are out there, have you ever linked to somebody and then somebody said, no, you can't link to me. Only one site is allowed to link to me. Have you ever encountered any of that?
I have not, but I have heard from other sites who say they link to a given page, and the page owners will request that they not have that link. But it's a very rare occurrence.
Michael Rivero of WhatReallyHappened.com, did Bush win the election?
I do not think that we really know just what happened with that election. The indications of what many people see as vote fraud, and others, to be more generous, are calling simply glitches and errors. It really calls the conclusions or the results of the election very much into doubt, and some of the third-party candidates are already calling for recounts in the key states of Florida and Ohio and New Hampshire. So I don't think we can say with any certainty which way the election went. Certainly the exit polls, which normally are considered a very good indicator and test for election fraud, were going strongly for Kerry earlier in the day. And between that and, of course, the notorious electronic voting machines that are very, very easy to alter and rig, it's very much up in the air who really won, and I don't think that there's I think the result of the election remains unproven at this point.
Well, how much fraud do you think there was out there? For instance, like in Ohio, you had mentioned on your website about there being more votes than people in some districts.
Yes.
How did that come about? And what's the connection to George Bush and his campaign that the voting machines were actually run by a Republican company? And how did that happen? And how is that allowed to happen in the United States of America?
Well, the way it happened, the owners of the two main electronic voting machine companies, Election Services and Systems, which is otherwise known as ESNS, and of course the Diebold Company, the CEOs of those two companies are actually brothers, and they are both staunch Republican supporters, and one of the top executives at Diebold only a year ago had publicly pledged that his goal was to deliver all of Ohio's electoral votes to George Bush. Now, the context of that statement was in his role as a fundraiser for Bush, but it did call into question that we have people who are basically designing and building these machines and are asking us to trust them, that the machines are accurate, because there is no audit trail, there is no paper trail with which to double-check what's going on. We're being asked to trust these people, and yet they're displaying a clear and very obvious bias toward one of the two candidates. That has to raise a certain amount of concern.
Now, Michael Rivero, you're investigating these types of things. How come the Democrats were so reluctant to investigate this, like, after the election? Like, they didn't send the lawyers out. I think they're sending the lawyers out now, I think I read on your website, WhatReallyHappened.com. But how come the Democrats were reluctant to do this? Was this a staged election? Are they letting this happen to them?
I don't think it's a case of letting it happen. I think it's a case of trying to decide, could we really reverse the results of the election, and would it be worth it? See, one of the great icons of belief in the American system is that whatever is going on in our nation, higher taxes, wars, whatever, somehow the people wanted it because they voted it in. And politicians of every party are very reluctant to get into that issue of perhaps discrediting the idea that we really are a democracy, because it would basically undercut the legitimacy of the government as a whole. And there is nothing new to this. Back in 1960, it was common knowledge inside Washington, D.C., that Kennedy had engaged in some voter shenanigans that basically took the election away from Richard Nixon by such a slim margin. And Nixon made the decision not to contest the election because he saw correctly it would have triggered a constitutional crisis and a crisis of confidence among the American people. And without that faith in the voting system, the American people are not going to put up with a lot of what we see government doing these days, especially with the overspending and the constant indebtedness, and certainly sending our kids off to fight a war in Iraq for reasons which have all evaporated.
We have a caller now. Caller, are you there? Go ahead to Michael Rivero from WhatReallyHappened.com. Are you there, caller?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Michael, I just have a quick question I'd like to ask you. It's not a complex one, but it has to do with your website, which I think is just fantastic. I think I should replace CNN on our Canadian stations, to tell you the truth. I go to it every day. But I'd like to know, do you answer emails when people send you stories? I've sent you various things in the past. I've never once gotten a reply from you. I'd like to know why that is.
Okay, well, I'm going to apologize. I try and answer as much of my email as I can, but yeah, we're considerably smaller than CNN over here, and basically I get swamped. I try and read every email. I do use a lot of material that gets sent to me, and if I did not reply to you, the only reason is that I got swamped and it was oversight and it was nothing personal, I can assure you.
Can you put something on your website to that effect if people want to send something to you that you may not get a reply, but at least ensure them that it's getting read?
I'll put that up on the reader's letters page when we're done with the interview today. And again, to anybody who's listening who has sent me email that did not get a reply, it doesn't mean I didn't read it. I really do try and read and scan everything.
I think my dog's barking at you.
Okay. Before you go, caller, are you still there?
Yes.
What was it that you wanted to tell Michael Rivero about? Because right now is your chance. What did you want to tell him about?
What did I want to tell him about? There was really nothing in particular. I just wanted to know if he...
No, but what were you emailing him in past? You emailed him in past some stuff.
Various stories that I get from other sources that I think would be appropriate on his site.
Well, what was the story that you thought was appropriate that would have been good on his site? Because you can now tell him.
No, there wasn't anything in the last day or two that comes to mind. It's just I'm just asking a general question.
But what about the stuff in past, though? I'm sure that was of some validity.
What?
I'm sure the stuff in past that you were going to send him. I mean, surely you've held this grudge long enough, caller, like to say, how come, Michael, you weren't responding to an email? What did you want to ask him? What were you going to point out? You must remember.
I found out 5 minutes ago that he wasn't even on the air because I went to his website and I called your station. I don't even know where he's from, whether he lives in Vancouver or what.
But caller, just hold on a second.
Other than to ask him if that's what he does.
No, but what?
Okay, let's not beat up on the guy. I mean, he made a point, and I didn't reply to his emails because I was it's nothing personal.
But you know my point. I'm fascinated to know. No, caller. I'm fascinated to know, what did you want to tell Michael a few months ago or whatever? What did you want to tell him?
I don't know. Do you remember what you wanted to tell your wife about 3 months ago?
Well, I don't have a wife, but I have you, the caller. And I'm fascinated because you probably have an interesting bit of information to ask Michael about. Now you're not telling me.
I'm going to tell you something. If it wasn't for Michael, I would be totally brain dead. So give me half a break here. I can't remember what it was a month or two ago.
Okay, well, thanks so much, caller. And
I say, Michael, keep up the good work. It's great.
Caller, are you still there? Caller, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Yeah.
No, caller.
Do-do-do-do-do. I love it.
No, almost. Do-do-do-do-do. Caller, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Do-do-do-do-do.
Adios, my friend.
No, that doesn't quite work. You almost got it. Do-do-do-do-do. Yes, thank you.
Okay.
And you're still listening to CITR FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
I can't guarantee how much longer I'll listen to you, but I sure watch. I love his website.
Well, thank you, caller. You can leave now if you'd like. Thank you. And you're still listening to CITR 101.9 FM, the Nardwater Human Serviette Radio Show. And we're speaking here to Michael Rivero from whatreallyhappened.com. If you have a question for Michael, it's 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC. CITR. And caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead to Michael Rivero from whatreallyhappened.com.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Good afternoon. You know, when they say weapons of mass destruction, do they just mean nuclear?
They generally, as it was defined for the purposes of the congressional authorization for military force in Iraq, it was weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear or chemical or biological weapons.
Okay, sorry, but biological. I'm reading this book by, Tom Mangold and Jeff Goldberg.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, it's chock full of facts about what they really had. They had tons of everything from anthrax to chickenpox. And what about... Well, anyway, what about the ones that defected and came over to the West and described in great detail these secret, hidden, stockpiles that subsequently were found?
No, they weren't.
David Kelly was still alive, by the way.
No, there was nothing actually found. If you go back to the Delfer report and the report from the United Nations inspectors, all of those leads turned out to be completely bogus. And what transpired is the U.S. was offering rewards for this information. So these guys were coming over from Iraq and saying, hey, I need the money. Saddam has got his weapons there. And they took their money and they went off and had fun. And then when it finally turned out that the inspectors showed up there, there was nothing really found. And the bottom line is the United States government is is now itself admitting that Saddam was not in violation of the United Nations resolution regarding his weapons of mass destruction. He just did not have them. He did not have nuclear weapons. He did not have chemical weapons. The only thing they found were some shells left over from the Iran-Iraq war that were so old that the materials inside them had just rotted away to uselessness.
Let me interject here for 1 second. Is it true? I heard a rumor, I don't know if this is true or not, that Israel actually launched atomic bombs at Iraq during the Gulf War of 91. Is this true, Mike Rovell?
No, I've heard nothing at all along those lines. In fact, the United States went to a very great deal of effort to prevent Israel from retaliating when Saddam was sending Scud missiles into Israel. And those missiles, of course, turned out to be rather impotent, and a couple of them, all they had for warheads were cement blocks. I mean, that's how they'd run out of material to use.
What sort of nasty stuff is the U.S. dropping on Iraq right now? Like, napalm has been reintroduced. What sort of nasty stuff is getting dropped there?
Yeah, the napalm issue has been confirmed. There are rumors of other weapons being used, but again, those are just rumors. But even so, napalm is pretty much internationally condemned because it's not a weapon that targets specific individuals like the insurgents or the terrorists, and it is a weapon that simply, you know, kills and destroys wide swaths of territory.
And don't forget depleted uranium, by the way, too.
That's depleted uranium is a horrible, horrible weapon because it's not only affecting the Iraqi people, it's affecting our kids. Our kids are coming home from the battle zone with lung
soldiers
of depleted uranium.
Yeah.
Caller, any other questions for Michael Rivera?
Not really, but does he know about Mangold and Goldberg's book?
I've heard of it. I have not read it.
I'm wondering about this information. You know, it gets so weird out there on the webs. You wonder what's true and what's not true.
Well, do check out whatreallyhappened.com.
By the way, I just found this out just now accidentally by trying to get Co-op Radio. No, not seriously, but I do listen to you guys. Okay, so I'm going to check you out, Michael. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, caller, and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Doot-doo.
And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. And we're speaking here to Michael Rivero from whatreallyhappened.com. Now, Michael, is Bin Laden still alive? Is Bin Laden still alive?
I do not believe so. He was reported having died of natural causes in December of 2001, and his funeral notice was published in many Arab newspapers. And certainly at least one of the two videotapes of Bin Laden that has been shown to the American public since then is proven to be a fraud. And this most recent one is very well done. But it also seems to be a fraud because the Osama in that tape says a lot of things that the real Osama had said exactly the opposite while he was still alive. And even Walter Cronkite, when he was being interviewed on the Larry King show, suggested that the tape was actually the work of Bush's political advisor, Karl Rove.
How about Saddam? Is he still alive?
As far as we know, he's still alive and in custody, and it may get interesting there because the U.S. is now admitting they cannot actually find any evidence of the crimes that Saddam has been accused of.
Was it actually Saddam that they captured? Was that really him?
At this point, I have no reason to doubt that it's really him. But, you know, there's so much deception going on and so many games, who knows? But I think it really is the real Saddam.
And is Arafat dead? Is Arafat dead?
Yeah, yes, he is. And for a while there, it was starting to be a replay of the whole Francisco Franco situation where he was dead. No, he wasn't. They kept trying to say he's still alive and lingering on. But, yes, Arafat is definitely dead, and that's going to really start changing the dynamics in the whole Palestinian issue.
Now, like John Wayne, did he die of AIDS?
Nobody really knows why he died, although one of his doctors says that the most likely probability is that he was poisoned.
Caller, are you there?
Yeah, hi.
Go ahead to Michael Rivero from whatreallyhappened.com on CITR, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. If anybody has any questions for Michael Rivero from whatreallyhappened.com, it's 604-822-2487. That's UBC CITR. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, that was quite a mouthful.
Well, there's a lot of information to get across.
What's going on there, man? I was hoping that you would touch a little bit on the ties between Democrats and Republicans in the United States, ties between, say, the Clinton family and the Bushes, Iran-Contra, MENA, Arkansas, all that sort of stuff.
Well, you know, history, of course, is not these little isolated blocks that they teach in the schools, but it's a very long interaction between competing agendas. And what this caller is referring to goes back to something called the Iran-Contra scandal in the United States, where the Reagan White House, with the elder Bush as vice president, violated what was called the Boland Act by funding and supporting military units in Nicaragua called the Contras. And because this was an unofficial little operation, there was no government money to pay for it. So they engaged in a little bit of smuggling on the side to get the money to pay for the guns to go back down. So there was this little pipeline of smuggling aircraft that were going with guns down to Nicaragua and drugs coming back. And it would have remained secret except that one of the airplanes crashed and a man named Eugene Hassenfuss was captured by the Nicaraguans, and he basically admitted what they were doing, and it became this huge, huge scandal, which resulted in congressional hearings. Now, everyone was talking about the gun running, but the drug running, of course, was kept a little bit more quiet because, you know, most Americans are very uncomfortable with the idea of government-sanctioned cocaine smuggling. But this whole operation was being run by George Bush out of the Reagan White House, and it was being run out of a town called Mena in the state of Arkansas. And at the time, the governor of the state of Arkansas was Bill Clinton. So there's a linkage between the Clinton family and the Bush family that goes back to the activities at the Mena airport and money laundering going through the various network of banks and savings and loans, which collectively were called Whitewater when it finally broke into its own scandal.
Now, caller, I don't know if you were getting at this. Were you getting at, like, the Skull and Bones connection? What is the Skull and Bones, Michael Rivero? And, caller, is that what you were talking about? How, like, George Bush went to Yale, Bill Clinton went to Yale, and did John Kerry go to Yale, too?
Yes.
Is that what you were talking about, caller?
Well, that's part of it, yeah. I think the Skull and Bones is just one organization within the whole, you know, I hate to say the word conspiracy, but for lack of a better term.
What do you feel about that, Michael Rivero, the Skull and Bones? Like, what is the Skull and Bones for people that don't know about the Skull and Bones? And how intertwined are the Clinton and Bush dynasties? Like, people are saying that they're hoping it'll be, you know, George Bush III, one of the younger Bushes, going up against Chelsea Clinton. You know, that would be the ultimate battle. Just keep it in the families.
Well, the how deeply they're intertwined, of course, is very hard to tell because a lot of the very nature of their business connections are being concealed. And certainly the idea that Clinton and the elder Bush were adversaries in that election may have been more illusion than anything, because George Bush had to leave the White House after one term because the Iran-Contra investigation was starting to get very, very close to him. So as far as Skull and Bones are concerned, this is a very, very old private organization, and its official name is the Russell Trust. And most people are unaware of it, that the Skull and Bones fraternity or organization was actually funded originally with opium money when it was first set up. But it has, in fact, included in its alumni many, many key players in government, the Central Intelligence Agency. Many of the editors at the Washington Post are Skull and Bones alumni. And it is, you know, obviously it's a networking organization for the people who are in control of large portions of our society, get to communicate with each other and coordinate their agendas.
How about John Kerry and his links to nobility? There was some sort of connection between John Kerry and European. Does that play into anything?
I don't really think so, because if you dig into anybody's family background, you're going to hit royalty sooner or later. I'm descended from Portuguese royalty on my father's side of the family, and it's no big deal because it's so far removed. I mean, nobody's going to call me up tomorrow and say, you know, for the glory of whatever, would you do us a favor? So I think it's one of those things that gets dug up and used by the media either to enhance somebody's reputation or to attack it. But I think certainly within this country, the idea that anybody is connected to royalty, you know, several generations back, it's of only passing interest.
Caller, any other questions for Michael Rivero from WhatReallyHappened.com?
I'd just like him to touch a little bit on the economic situations going on around the world right now, the demise of the U.S. dollar, the rise of gold, things like that. I'm going to hang up and listen on the radio. Thanks.
Well, thank you, caller, and do-do-da-loot-do.
Do frickin' do, man.
I'm not sure if the caller is alluding to this, but some people have said that it's a deliberate attempt to keep the U.S. dollar low so that the U.S. will fall and then the international community can take over and again resume power of the world. Like, this is the end of the USA of the superpower. I don't know if that's what the caller was getting at, but I'm just wondering what you think about that.
Okay, well, I don't think that this is being done to the United States from outside. It's a nice, convenient excuse if you don't want to face up to facts. But I think the United States is in dire economic trouble, and it really is from decisions that have been made over many, many years by many administrations and many Congresses who just say, well, I'm going to do what works for us now, and we'll let the next administration or the next generation figure out how to clean up the mess. It is really a kind of a three-pronged threat right now. First and foremost, of course, is the debt of the government itself, which at the federal level is at least $7 trillion, if not more. At the level of the aggregate states, it doubles that. The second issue is that since the 1980s, the United States has kind of abandoned the issue of manufacturing products, and we have turned more and more to buying things that we need from outside the country. The problem is, of course, that we've got money flowing out of the United States to other countries at the rate of $1.5 billion a day, and we don't have, you know, anything coming back in except investment capital to prop that up. So this is a tremendous downward pressure on the dollar right there. Finally, the third problem has been the stock market, which even though it has corrected partially over the last couple of years, it is still very overvalued in terms of the stock versus the stock's earning ability, and there is still downward pressure on the stock market as well. It's being countered by what's called the plunge protection team, which tries to use market forces, put options, to force the prices back up so that it can be used as a political banner. But there is a problem and a fragileness with the American economy, and I think at some point when we see more of the oil nations switch from the dollar to the euro as the international currency of choice, we're going to see the pressures down, forcing the dollar down, are going to finally prevail, and we're going to see the dollar drop significantly.
Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead to Michael Rivero from whatreallyhappened.com.
Michael, how you doing? I'm Haroon.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Michael, I guess going back to Fahrenheit 9-1-1 that Michael Moore had done, it was pretty a one-sided kind of documentary in that Saudis are bad and that the government is in conspiracy with them. But in your site, which I've gone through quite a lot, it is very much the CNN for the new generation. There's been a lot of involvement of the Israeli angle in 9-1-1, and wanted you to comment on that. And secondly, if you would be interested in doing a documentary of your own on that topic.
Well, let me answer the second part of that first. I am interested in doing a documentary, and we're trying to put one together right now, and we do have some funding. Time management, of course, is everybody's problem right now.
Yeah.
With regard to the first issue, it is no secret that I completely disagree with Michael Moore on his implication that the Saudis were behind 9-1-1. And the reason is very simply that, Moore bases his entire case on the idea that the Saudis left the United States immediately after 9/11. Well, if the Saudis had been behind 9/11, wouldn't it have been more prudent for them to leave before?
Yes.
Secondarily, of course, the Saudis don't need to knock over a building if they want to hurt the United States. All they have to do is pull out their investment, because they are one of the largest investors in the United States, and it is at least in part their investment that helps support the value of the dollar on the global marketplace. So if the Saudis really decided they wanted to hurt our country, they could do it by perfectly legal means, just by saying, we're going to take our money and go home. So, the motive just isn't there. The means, if they had wanted to do it, were certainly there. Now, as far as the issue of Israel, this goes back to a series of stories that were run on Fox News by reporter Carl Cameron, in which it was reported that just about the same time 9/11 happened, the FBI started rounding up the largest spy ring that had ever been uncovered inside the United States.
Sorry to interrupt, Michael. Just want to say one quick thing about before 9/11. Didn't the Israeli intelligence actually warn the United States before 9/11 was going to happen that there was going to be a 9/11? Was there some talk of this?
there was a very vague warning, which basically, you know, is a nice trick to do to deflect suspicion to somebody else and say, you know, when the bang happens, these guys did it. But if you look at what was exactly said by Israel, there was nothing in it that would have helped the United States evade the issue, or rather avoid what was happening. Although I personally am of the opinion, for reasons we can get into a little bit later on, that the United States government was definitely part of what happened on 9/11, and this gets back to George Bush and his book about goats. But going back to the Carl Cameron story and the Israeli spy ring, it's important to notice that this spy ring story was quickly suppressed, and in a manner not unlike the more recent one where they uncovered yet another Israeli agent operating inside the Pentagon office that was the source of most of these claims about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, which later turned out to be completely bogus. That story, too, I mean, this was big headlines back the end of August, and it said, you know, this Israeli agent is in this office that was feeding the White House all these claims about Iraq, and then all of a sudden the story just went away, and we see this happening over and over again. And now back with the story on 9/11, it turned out that on the day the World Trade Towers were destroyed, five Israelis were arrested for dancing and cheering and videotaping as the towers came down. And on the Carl Cameron story, it was reported that there's actually evidence that links these five Israelis, two of whom were later identified as Mossad agents, with 9/11. But our government, the United States government, has classified this information so that we cannot find out what it is. Well, this immediately tells you that, you know, there could be something going on, because if you are able to imagine anybody willing to knock down the World Trade Towers to strike at America, you have to also admit that there could be a third party willing to knock down the World Trade Towers in order to blame that attack on someone else. And you need to look back at the history of Israel, and in particular an event called the Levon Affair, where Israel was caught bombing British and American targets inside Egypt and planting evidence to make it look like Arabs were doing it. But they got caught at that, and eventually one of their high ministers, named Levon, for whom the affair is named after, was forced to resign over the scandal. So we have to take a look at, there could be some trickery. There could be, it's called false flag operations in spycraft.
Michael Rivero, getting to the bottom of this, however, you were saying, you know, this classified information, it like never actually got out there. Now that there is a 9/11 report, years ago, May Brussel went through the Warren Commission report. You know, May Brussel and Dave Emery, those guys, they went through, well, she's now dead of cancer, mysteriously, but she went through the Warren report, you know, and found a lot of glaring errors, oversights, and contradictory stuff. Is there a lot of stuff in there in the 9/11 report? Like, if you go through it really closely, can you learn a lot of stuff in there? Did they learn from the mistakes of the Warren report? Is there a lot of contradict? Is there some interesting information, like, if you went there page by page?
Well, what is most interesting about the 9/11 report is not what is in there, but what is not. The 9/11 commission was set up at the very beginning to investigate intelligence failures, and they were not allowed to look at anything else. So, of course, the report deals with the intelligence failures that allowed 9/11 to happen, and there's nothing in there about who was really behind it, because they were barred from looking at that right from the very start. It is simply assumed that we know who was on all those airplanes, even though the FBI itself admits that all the identifications that were used by the hijackers were skillfully made fakes. And Robert Mueller has actually stated in speeches that there is no actual evidence that the people that are named as the official 9/11 suspects were ever actually on those aircraft.
And then also that five or six of them are still alive.
Yeah, some of them have reportedly turned up alive, and in point of fact, the United States officially apologized, I think it was to Saudi Arabia, over naming one of their airline pilots as a suspect, because he turned up alive, and the U.S. was forced to apologize for that. The bottom line is, we don't really know who was on those airplanes, but we know who we're supposed to think it was because of all the evidence that was left around to be found. Suitcases that somehow didn't make it on the plane, parked cars filled with Koran and maps and everything that were just parked at the airport parking lot where they could be found eventually. And it looks less like a terrorism act than the set of a really bad, cheap detective movie where there are clues just left everywhere in sight so that you cannot possibly miss them.
Caller, any other questions for Michael Rivero?
Well, Michael, just to say, keep up the good work, and I also have a film company as well, and I'll be emailing you and supporting you on your venture, and all the best. Any plans on coming to Vancouver?
Well, we don't really know. We have no plans to come to Vancouver immediately. We do love the city. My wife and I, when we lived in Washington State, we'd come up to Vancouver all the time.
Great.
So we're very fond of the city, especially that wonderful anthropological museum that you've got there. It's just lovely.
Caller, Michael is actually involved in movies too, right, Michael?
Yeah, I've been in the movie business for 25 years.
You know, the Stargate, Star Trek thing. Have you shot anything in Vancouver? Were you involved with 21 Jump Street or Wise Guy or anything like that?
No, I tried to get involved in some of the productions up there because you've got a booming film economy up there. We almost got to work on one production, but unfortunately some of the cross-border friction because of Canada not agreeing 100% with the Bush war agenda, that made doing business across the border a little bit more difficult, and we lost that project.
Well, thanks so much, caller, and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Wab-bab-loo-bab-wab-bam-boo.
Well, that'll do. Thank you. And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. And we're speaking here to Michael Rivero from WhatReallyHappened.com. And if you have any questions for Michael, it's 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. Also, check out WhatReallyHappened.com. And caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead to Michael Rivero from WhatReallyHappened.com.
Hey, Michael, I really enjoy your website. I check it out every day. I just had a question for you on peak oil and if you thought that was the main underlying issues for the Bush administration to go to war.
The peak oil issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of a hard one to nail down because there's a lot of different theories about whether we're at the peak oil point, whether oil is in fact biologically generated or if there's a non-biological process that's creating it deeper down in the Earth's crust. But it does appear that in the absence of a threat of weapons of mass destruction from Iraq, that the primary motive for the invasion appears to be step one of controlling what is left of the Mideast's oil in order to guarantee America's industrial access to it and to, of course, deny it to other nations. And it's more than just an economic situation because oil is still the primary fuel for conventional warfare, non-nuclear warfare. And you cannot run tanks and fighter planes on solar cells and rubber bands. So if the United States manages to grab significant portion of the remaining oil on Earth, then it can basically say who can and cannot fight conventional wars going into this next century.
Caller, any other questions at all for Michael Rivero from WhatReallyHappened.com?
Yeah, just one more question. I was wondering if you knew about Mike Vreeland and if you felt he was a credible character or if he was just there for disinformation.
Maybe you could give some background on that there, Mike.
Well, Vreeland was a man who apparently was arrested and thrown in jail up in Canada and supposedly wrote a letter to his guards predicting that 9/11 was going to happen and saying that it was a covert intelligence plot to start a war against the Middle East. And the claim appeared to be credible, but there have been a lot of issues about Vreeland coming out where it's kind of hard to say just how reliable any of it is.
Well, thanks so much, caller. Anything else to add?
No, that's everything. Thanks.
And doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Boo-boo.
And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. And we're speaking here to Michael Rivero from WhatReallyHappened.com. If you have any questions for Michael, it's 604-822-2487, 604-UBC-CITR. So, Michael, there's nothing in the 9/11 report that was interesting that led you to think about something else? Like, not one little thing? Because, like the Warren Commission, the analogy I'm trying to say here is there's lots of stuff that made you think, I wonder if I should pursue that lead. Was there anything in the 9/11 report?
Well, as I said before, the issue wasn't what was in the report, but what was absent. Now, the analogy I like to use is, let us say that in the wake of the sinking of the Titanic, if the commission that was investigating it was told you can only analyze the quality of the metal in the hull, and was that a contributing factor? And you would, of course, get a report on whether the iron was good or the steel was good in the ship's hull, and riveting issues, and did they they rivet it tight enough, and were the expansion joints solid enough? And, of course, the report would completely avoid the issue of Captain E.J. Smith just sailing the ship through a known iceberg field at full tilt boogie, and running the thing into this huge block of ice. And we have the same situation with the 9/11 report. From the start, it was told to focus only on intelligence failure issues. It was never allowed to go back and examine the primary assumption of who was behind the attack and why. And this is actually part of a much larger series of cover-ups, which, basically make it look like 9/11 was a staged event to trigger America's anger into supporting a war which was already in the planning stages. And this is a very important thing people need to keep in mind. As early as March of 2001, when the American people were getting all Gary Conned all the time on the mainstream media, the U.S. government was telling other governments on Earth that the U.S. would be invading Afghanistan in October. So 9/11 happened exactly at the right time to anger American people into supporting the invasion of Afghanistan exactly on the schedule that had been put out to other nations in March of that year. This was reported in BBC. This was reported in Jane's Defense. These are very highly respected journals that were carrying the story that the war was already planned ahead of time before 9/11 happened.
How about the little thought that the airplanes, the jets, actually didn't crash into the World Trade Center, that they're actually ditched into the Atlantic Ocean? Have you heard anything about that?
I have heard a lot about that, and it is all planted disinformation so that the mainstream media can say, oh, look at those silly little people out on the Internet, they'll believe anything. But there have been quite a few of these efforts to plant, obviously, ridiculous information in the discussions. And it's a classic disinformation technique, and it existed long before the Internet. When the House Select Committee on Assassinations was taking a second look at the Kennedy assassination, they did a great deal of fuss over the umbrella gun that was supposed to shoot Kennedy with a poison dart. And they brought in the umbrella and showed that it was just an ordinary umbrella and laughed and chuckled and, oh, those silly people who question the Warren Report, they'll believe anything. And it's a classic disinfo technique. And, of course, one of the biggest ones they have going around is that there was no plane that really hit the Pentagon. And it's being put out there by the government to try and make people who question the official story at all look silly. And it's just something you got to keep an eye out for.
Caller, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Go ahead to Michael Rivero.
Yes, I was wondering, with all this disinformation that's going on in the media and the government having a certain play in what it does, I was wondering if you thought that the corporations were more in charge and the governments were just a puppet for the corporations to do as they will, as like with globalization and protecting American foreign private investment and whatnot. I was wondering if you could maybe elaborate on something like that.
Well, I don't think it's a question of one being in charge of the other. I think it is that we have a situation where the corporations and the government are cooperating together out of a sense of shared common agendas of things that they both want. We do have a government that seems to have a lot
of... Actually, sorry to interrupt you, Michael. I was going to say, caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Maybe could you turn down your computer or radio, please, because unfortunately some disinformation is coming out of that, causing an echo, and we can't actually hear what Michael Rivero is saying.
I am sorry.
Go ahead, Michael.
Okay. Anyway, as I was saying, what we have are a lot of people who are in government positions of power who are also very tightly tied in with the corporations. Dick Cheney, of course, and his connections to Halliburton. Donald Rumsfeld, who is one of the people who gave us aspartame and its health hazards. So we have government and corporations sort of sharing the same people and sharing the same common goals, and as a result tend to work together uniformly in a mutually beneficial, mutually cooperative fashion, which is, I believe Mussolini defined that as being fascism, when corporations and government work together against the interests of the common people. So I don't think it's one puppet to the other.
Okay, and I had another question. I was also wondering, with all this information that you gather and whatnot, did you ever consider putting out a documentary somewhat like Noam Chomsky did with Manufacturing Consent and all these other great documentary-type programs coming out?
We're working on one right now.
Are you?
Yeah.
Does it have a name yet?
No.
or a tentative date.
It's just Mike's film right now.
The Mike's film. Well, I look forward to seeing it. I think it's great that the people are finally getting some information that's you know, legitimate and unbiased, and I commend you on your work.
Well, thank you very much, but I'd like to make a comment to that. My hope is not that people are going to come to my website and accept what they read there, but that they're going to see what's at my site and how it differs from what they get from the government-controlled media, and they will learn to trust themselves to figure out what's going on.
Yes.
And
well, you have to know your enemy, too. Yes, it's great to have both sides of the story, which is great. Well, I think people should definitely have both sides of the story before they make their mind up.
I absolutely agree.
Well, thanks so much, caller, and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Doot-doo.
And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. And we're speaking here to Michael Rivero from WhatReallyHappened.com. And if you have any questions for Michael Rivero, it's 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. So, Michael, just to recap, did Bush win the election?
I don't think that we can say for certainty that he did. The evidence of vote fraud is continuing to surface all across the United States. There are a lot of precincts where there were more votes cast than there were registered voters. Before the actual election, there were a lot of spoofs going on where people were being sent mail saying that their precincts had changed. They were receiving phone calls telling them they had to go to a different precinct the next day. There were a couple of instances where this Get Out the Vote organization that was registering voters turned out to be run by a Republican public relations firm, and they were throwing out all the Democratic vote registrations that they'd collected, just shredding them and throwing them in the trash. So a lot of people showed up at the election and were not allowed to vote because nobody could find their registrations. So there's all kinds of evidence that has surfaced that this election was anything but fair and honest.
So, did Bush win? Well, maybe. Is bin Laden alive?
I don't believe bin Laden is alive. I think, in fact, bin Laden was reported dead in December of 2001, and his funeral was reported in the Arab newspapers.
Is Saddam alive?
I think that's the real Saddam that they have in jail, and whether or not they'll bring him to trial or not is very much up in the air because they can't seem to find any evidence that he actually committed the crimes he's accused of.
Is Arafat dead?
Definitely.
Is Bush alive? And I mention this because there's a lot of talk about this thing that's on his back. He's kind of like a Frankenstein a la Gene Wilder. What's this thing on Bush's back that was present during the debates and people have seen him walking around with? Is it really George Bush or is he a robot?
Well, I think that's the real George Bush, but as to the device that he's wearing, a lot of people thought it might be a queuing system, but he said a couple of things during the debates which made it sound like he was reacting to somebody that only he could hear. The queuing systems, though, are very, very small, and they're very easy to conceal. It's just a small box on the belt, a wire loop that goes around your neck under your shirt, and then the earpiece alone. The object that was underneath Bush's jacket was considerably larger, and there have been some people who suggested, because Bush sort of looked like he'd suffered a mild stroke because one side of his mouth tended to sag, they were thinking it might have been a portable heart monitor.
Caller, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead to Michael Rivero from WhatReallyHappened.com.
Hi there, Michael. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. Michael, I've been reading a lot on your website about all this propaganda leading up to a possible conflict with Iran. And I was wondering, with an article I read on your website recently about how Iran has said to the international community that it's going to slow down its nuclear ambitions, do you think that will stop the U.S. from going ahead with a planned conflict with them?
No, I don't. I think the U.S. is just going to try and come up with another reason to go ahead with the invasion. It's the same thing we saw with Iraq. First, it was the weapons of mass destruction. Oh, then they aren't there. Then it's because Saddam was a really bad person. Oh, that isn't it. Now it's because Satan lives in Iraq, and they just keep coming up with new excuses. But definitely with Iran having agreed to stop its enrichment program, it does leave the U.S. And the U.S.'s allies in this matter very much without a clear reason to proceed with an invasion.
Hmm. Any other questions, caller?
Yeah, with the current Iraq conflict, I think Dick Cheney said that you know, the war on terrorism will be a war without any foreseeable end. Is there any end in sight, or is this conflict just going to slog on for years and years?
I think the war is just going to go on for years and years because the real goal of it, as I was saying earlier in the show, appears to be control of what is remaining of the Middle East's oil resources. Mm-hmm. And this war on terrorism, you can't have a war on a noun. It is simply the United States is the aggressor nation. It is invading nations that have done nothing wrong to us in order to go in and basically grab their wealth. And the situation in Iraq right now is just tragic. It should be very clear to any impartial observers that this war is not going well, that the U.S. is not just fighting a few, they use the term rebels and so forth to try and make it look like somehow these guys are in the wrong. But the reality is the American troops are fighting the entire people of Iraq who want the foreign invader to leave their home. And there's an important point here. You don't bring freedom to people by pointing a gun at them. You bring freedom to people by leaving them alone.
Absolutely.
Caller, you have another question?
One last one. With Israel, not too many people, as you mentioned in your website, speak about Israel as an influence in this current Middle Eastern conflict. I don't think there's an end in sight to the Israel-Palestine conflict, but their influence on world events and decisions by world powers seems to be quite great. And what's your take on Israel in this current Iraq situation?
Well, one of Bush's aides, Philip Zelikow, came right out in a public speech and said that the real reason the Iraq war was fought was for Israel's protection. And this does make a little bit of sense here because the reality is Iraq could have had all the weapons of mass destruction it wanted. It would not have dared use them against the U.S. because the U.S. has the largest nuclear arsenal on Earth and the rockets with which to deliver them anywhere on the planet. So Iraq was never a threat to the United States. That was just, you know, utter nonsense. But Iraq was a potential threat to Israel, even though Israel also has nuclear weapons. I think they're the sixth largest nuclear force on Earth, and while they don't have intercontinental missiles, they do have medium and long-range conventional missiles that can carry nuclear warheads.
Wow.
So that does appear to, you know, as I said, Zelikow said that was at least part of the reason this war was being fought. As far as Israel's influence on our government, there's absolutely no question of it. They have this very powerful lobbying group called AIPAC, which was also implicated in this latest spy scandal with the Pentagon. But their members hand out literally millions of dollars to U.S. congressional campaigns, and it is very hard to run for office at the national level in this country unless you have their support.
Well, thanks so much, caller. Anything else? You okay?
It seems like it's...
Sorry, I think you're cutting up. Actually, I think we better just dump you right now. Great, thank you. And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. We're speaking to Michael Rivero from WhatReallyHappened.com, 604-822-247, UBC CITR. And caller, are you there?
Nardwuar, Michael.
Go ahead, Hans Kloss.
Oh, of course we do. Listen, I don't know, I was in and out of my car, so I don't know, we might have mentioned some of those things. There's one thing, do you remember Rumsfeld pulling out injured people from Pentagon? Isn't that great for photo op? Do you remember those pictures?
You mean at the Pentagon after 9/11?
That's correct.
Yes, he was there for the photo ops, yes.
Well, you know, it's just a beautiful thing, coincidence, to find this guy there. By the way, anyway, I had the last interview with Dave Emmer. I forgot the name of the fellow he was interviewing. And
Daniel Hopsfeder, that investigate.
Close to this, I think. And he actually mentioned that none of those so-called hijackers or presumed hijackers was in a school. They were all commercial pilots from Saudi Arabia.
Some of them were commercial pilots from Saudi Arabia, which makes the idea that they were taking flight lessons here in the U.S., doubly suspicious. There was that one case which basically just said this has to be a frame-up, where this guy went to a flight school and said, I need to learn how to fly a 747 or 767, and I only need to learn how to take off because I don't plan on landing. I mean, you know, I don't care what you're planning on doing in New York. You don't go into a flight school and make a statement like that unless you're intending to attract attention to you, to yourself. And there are so many of these instances surrounding 9/11 where it does look like somebody was trying to attract attention to themselves and to leave an impression. A really good example was the night before 9/11 in New York, these individuals who showed up at various strip clubs and just made a real nuisance of themselves and saying, tomorrow we will strike a blow for whatever, and, you know, made a point of asking the bartender to Xerox their driver's licenses, so that there'd be no question that the, you know, the planted names would be there the next day after the events happened.
Is this the same way before the JFK assassination that Lee Harvey Oswald was spotted everywhere around the world doing all sorts of things?
Yeah, the same thing. It's basically advertising the presence of somebody before you use them as a patsy. A really good example, before 9/11, we sort of knew something was brewing because, like, starting 2 months before 9/11, the news started talking about Osama bin Laden every single day. Osama this, Osama that. And he hadn't actually done anything to really make himself newsworthy, but all of a sudden, everybody was issuing statements about Osama was going to do this, Osama was going to do that. And I actually posted an article at my website saying, somebody is laying the public relations groundwork for something that is going to involve Osama bin Laden. And, of course, on 9/11, there was, you know, the attack on the World Trade Towers and the Pentagon. And we were off and running and, you know, shooting people who lived over oil.
But hadn't bin Laden done a few things like the Cole, the USS Cole, when he bombed that?
Well, again, nobody is really sure because there were, again, a lot of inconsistencies about the USS Cole. They depicted it as being tied up very close to shore, but an aerial photo of the USS Cole at the time of the attack shows that it was way, way, way out in the middle of the harbor. And it's important to remember that the USS Cole normally did not go into that port. It was ordered there on the last moment and diverted from its normal route. So how did these so supposed terrorists know that this ship that never went in there was going to show up on that particular day?
Hans, any other questions for Michael Rivero?
Actually, a couple. And the same way Timothy McVeigh was behaving before this Oklahoma thing, that's really strange, too. You know, it's some, for some reason, those people, they want to let everybody know before anything happens, you know?
Yeah, that's the first suspicious thing, when they go around and start saying, hey, you, remember me, remember I was here, and then something happens. And that's a real suspicious.
Yeah, well, it looks like you would go in tuxedo and, you know, and pickpocketing things. There's the one thing. There's this soil from Ground Zero was actually whole soil from this area where the skyscrapers were. They were just actually apparently taken away by Jeb Bush or this and just disappeared for some reason. Like there were supposed to be some I don't know, traces found of some different chemicals. You know anything about it?
I'm having trouble hearing you because of the bad connection. I do know that there was quite a bit of evidence from some of the flight schools that was grabbed by Jeb Bush.
He was talking about the actual soil from the World Trade Centers, the actual base of the World Trade Centers.
That's
the
right.
Soil, like the soil, the dirt.
Well, I know that the steel was all quickly sold to foreign reprocessing plants, and very little of the material was left. I don't know what the soil would really show anything significant, because you know, it does appear that while the buildings, especially Building 7, may have had some help coming down, it would have left very few traces.
Well, isn't the metro? Subway underneath this? Maybe that's why.
There are subways underneath, but they didn't collapse. There were a bunch of tunnels that connected the buildings underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Hans, any other questions for Michael Rivero?
Very, very last one. Apparently there was, I don't know who I heard this from, there was about 20 exercises before, conducted by NORAD, I believe. Buildings, I mean, the jets going into the buildings. And apparently this 21st or 25th was the real one, and nobody was paying attention to it.
Yeah, that's a story that broke just about a month ago, where, and this came out of, I think it was Mike Rupert, who broke this story, where NORAD was running all of these drills simulating hijacked airplanes on 9/11, and that this is the reason they didn't notice the extra three or four planes that were flying around until it was too late. And, of course, it just sort of, you know, beggars the imagination of how, you know, these supposed Arab and Saudi terrorists just happened to know that that day there were going to be exercises all over the country that would conceal what they were doing with their aircraft.
Mm. Well, my following question to this, and I promise the last one. Do we know what happened to those people who were in charge of those radars, you know, and there were actual people who are doing those exercises? They're still alive?
Well, as far as I know, but they're in the military and they've probably been reassigned, and it took 2 years to find out that the exercises were even happening. So it's no doubt it's going to be very hard to track back and find the radar records.
Well, it seems like a perfect murder, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, not quite perfect.
We're
suspicious.
Thanks very much, Hans Kloss. Keep on rocking in the free world and doot doot a loot doo.
Two.
And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nerdwriter Human Serviette Radio Show. And caller, are you there?
I am here.
Go ahead to Michael Rivero from WhatReallyHappened.com. Have you checked out WhatReallyHappened.com at all, caller?
Well, I have checked out one thing, and I'd like to hear his opinion on this. What is the possibility that the United States will sponsor a sovereigntist or separatist movement in Khuzestan, which controls 95% of Iraqi oil, Iranian oil, and the people living in this province of Iran are mostly Arabic-speaking, and therefore have a lot of hostility to the Farsi-speaking majority? Is it a possibility that the United States is already funding a sovereigntist movement in Khuzestan that will call for independence from Iran and, backed up by American force, will therefore be annexed, or you might say made of a kind of a protectorate by the United States in this attempt to garner all the world's oil? I'd like to hear his opinion on that. Thank you very much.
Don't hang up, caller.
Okay, I think that's a very good possibility, especially now that Iran has reached a deal with the European Union regarding cessation of its enrichment operations. I think that would be a perfect excuse for the U.S. to militarily intervene in the region and grab control of oil facilities.
But is it close to Iraq? I mean, or with the United States, is it some distance from the Iraqi border?
I'm not sure that the distance from the border is really going to be significant. It's going to be a case of political control of the region. And if the U.S. is going to do that, I think they're going to have to do it very, very soon. The reason being that the situation in Iraq is clearly deteriorating. The U.S. is not able to get the oil out of the region they thought they were going to. More and more of our kids are coming home in boxes. And the reasons for the war have pretty much evaporated. Everybody knows now that the U.S. lied to launch a war of conquest on a sovereign nation that had not actually done anything to us. And they're not going to sit still for that for another country. So if the U.S. is going to go into Iran, it's going to have to do it very soon.
Can it do it, though? I mean, you know, I've seen all these things posted on various things that the United States or the Bush government is now thinking of bringing in a draft. They would need a hell of a lot of people to bring in a draft to even conquer one province of Iran, wouldn't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Iraqi military was completely destroyed by years and years of sanctions, and they had old, useless weapons. But Iran, they've got a lot of people in uniform, and they've got modern weapons, and it would be a completely different story if the U.S. were to try to go into Iran. But it seems to be the next, you know, major step, because if the U.S. conquers Iraq, Iran, and Saudi Arabia, that gives them control of basically 90% of the oil that's underneath that part of the world.
And do you feel that the United States might go even further and try and partition Russia and therefore bring Russian oil under their own control? I mean the oil around the Black Sea and areas like that.
Well,
that would be suicidal in a way, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I hope they wouldn't try it, but, you know, Dick Cheney built that bunker underneath the vice president's house for some reason.
I see. Okay, nice talking to you, and I like to hear you, John Ruskin. You take care, eh?
Caller and doot doot a loot doo.
Doot doot.
And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nerdwater Human Serviette Radio Show. I want to ask you, Michael Rivero, and we're speaking here to Michael Rivero. If you have any questions for Michael Rivero, it's 604-822-2487 at 604-UBC-CITR. I want to ask you, Michael, Janet Jackson's boob, did that cost carry the election? Janet Jackson's boob.
No, I don't think so, because frankly, it wasn't that impressive.
Because there's a lot to be made about these pop culture connections, and the way they're trying to blame pop culture on Carrie's loss, or in general, how the world is going on. I found this clipping the other day, which is quite incredible, and the headline is, "Heavy Metal Freak May Have Made Terror Tape." Azam the American, who showed up threatening blood in the streets on an Al-Qaeda terror tape just days before the U.S. presidential election, has been tentatively identified as a 26-year-old Californian who grew up the son of a hippie freak and became a death metal freak before he converted to Islam 9 years ago. What the hell is going on? Why are they blaming heavy metal and death metal for bin Laden?
I think basically they're just looking to find, I think they're trying to create as much confusion as possible right now, because a lot of people are asking very good questions as to what is going on and how the United States got into the present mess that it's in. And the mainstream media is just trying to keep as much confusion going so that, you know, people who are still supporting the government can say, oh, well, it's this fault and it's that fault. And the idea isn't really to cast the blame on anyone like Janet Jackson or musicians. It's just to delay the formation of consensus, because when the people arrive at a consensus as to how we got into this mess, if they arrive at a consensus that the election was stolen, if they arrive at a consensus that the war in Iraq is based on lies, then the U.S. government is going to have a real problem trying to move forward into future wars, because we've already seen, you know, in the run-up to Iraq, we had millions of people marching in the streets saying this war is wrong, and it's only going to get worse from here, especially if they try and activate a draft. That is really going to get the apathetic people and the people who've just said, well, it's not really my issue to deal with, then it will be their issue, and you're going to see a lot of anger start to surface.
Is this mean to blame it on the heavy metal? You know, heavy metal freak may have made terror tape. They never made Bruce, they didn't make that. How much fun did they make of Bruce Springsteen? What sort of rubbing did Bruce Springsteen get for participating in an election? Like, they're blaming heavy metal here, but I didn't see Springsteen kind of rubbed that much.
Well, it's like when they beat up on the Dixie Chicks. It's just something that they can make noise about to try and send a message that, you know, you're not supposed to question what is going on, you know, with the war president. So I think it was completely inappropriate for them to blame, you know, heavy metal or anything like that. On the other hand, you know, this kid does have to take responsibility for having made the tape in the first place. And the media ran with it and made a big deal out of it, because it was portraying, you know, the enemy in the way that the media wanted it to be portrayed. And for all we know, this kid did this as a publicity gag to get his particular form of music moving, and maybe he's going to try and do an album or something. But the bottom line is, he did make the tape. The media did turn it into a big event, only to find out that it really wasn't, who they thought it was inside the little headscarf.
Actually, that name, Azam the American, it does kind of sound a bit kind of rap, hip-hop-y. Maybe he is going to try to capitalize on this.
Well, it does sort of, it reeks as a publicity stunt no matter which way you look at it. It's just a question of, you know, who was doing the stunt and what publicity they wanted to get.
Now, how easy is it to get a tape to Al-Qaeda? Will Al-Jazeera? Will Al-Jazeera run any sort of tape?
I don't know. It really depends on how it's presented to them. The issue you need to be aware of, though, is when they talk about Al-Qaeda websites, most of those turn out to be hosted here in the United States, either in Texas or in Virginia. And when they were still announcing the Al-Qaeda websites by name, computer experts were tracking them down and discovering that they were owned by, you know, companies in Washington, D.C., and public relation firms on the West Coast. Now, of course, they just talk about an Al-Qaeda website, and they won't tell you what the name of it is so that people can't track them down. But a lot of these websites are definitely fraudulent, and I imagine if you set one of them up and put your tape on it, then you send an email to Al Jazeera saying, oh, look, over on this this website, there's a tape of somebody planning terrible, terrible things. They might get suckered into playing it. And, of course, once Al Jazeera has it, then the mainstream networks would pick it up and run with it.
Well, Al Jazeera's run an incredible amount of tapes. Can U.S. intelligence just kind of monitor or have people on the inside of Al Jazeera so that they know where these tapes are actually coming from? How hard would it be to actually track this down? Because Al Jazeera are having tons and tons of tapes. Can't they just stake out the place?
Well, they could stake out the place, but if the tapes get sent in, in a package with no return address, I mean, there's no real way to track that back. And there's also the possibility that it's U.S. intelligence that's manufacturing some of these tapes. Certainly, one of the earlier Osama bin Laden videotapes was proven to be a fraud using an actor who only marginally looked like Osama. So somebody is faking these tapes and sending them in, and who is it who needs Osama to come around, when they're up for re-election or they're trying to push the war agenda a little bit more? We've got another one today where they're saying Osama bin Laden has a nuclear weapon and is going to use it. Well, who benefits from that tape? Obviously, the people pushing for more war are the ones who, stand to gain from these Osama tapes turning up. And you know what they say about war, the first casualty is truth. So expect to be lied to by the people who want war.
Michael Rivero, and winding up here with Michael Rivero from whatreallyhappened.com. If anybody has any questions for Michael Rivero, it's 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. John F. Kennedy Jr., he was murdered, apparently. Now, what is the connection between John F. Kennedy Jr. and Bill Clinton and George Bush? I had heard that he was killed because he said he would run for president, and that would interfere with Gore, who said he would lose to Bush in the next election. Or he was killed because he said he would run for senator, which would interfere with Hillary Clinton, who possibly is going to lose to the next Republican that runs for president. That is all intertwined.
Well, I definitely think the second one is the more likely of the case, and it's very interesting to note that right after John F. Kennedy Jr.'s death, there was an entire issue of Newsweek magazine that simply vanished from the stands that had an article about Kennedy in it, and it has been reported to me that in that article, Kennedy flat out states that he was getting ready to run for the U.S. Senate, and had he done so, of course, it definitely would have been very difficult for Hillary Clinton, who was obviously not from New York to begin with, to go in there and run for that seat. Now, as far as Kennedy's crash, there is a lot of information that was put out about that, which is patently false. He was a very good pilot. He was ready to take his instrument rating test. And the weather out on that island was clear. I actually have family who live out there, and they confirmed that on that night that it happened, there was no fog. They could see airplanes up in the sky flying around the island, which means those airplanes up in the sky could see the island. The center of the island had these brand new, very brilliant lights that were so bright that locals were complaining about them, that they lit up the sky so brightly at night that it was actually interfering with people sleeping. So there is really no question that, the idea that he was a bad pilot and that he got lost in the fog just does not bear close examination. There was one witness who heard an explosion up in the sky at about the right time when Kennedy's plane started falling out of the air on radar. So it does look like he was assassinated and there was another cover-up, and of course there's nothing strange about that. We've seen Kennedy boys die and cover-ups follow their deaths going back, 30 years.
Why does the family allow all these cover-ups to happen? Like, they just keep lining up their kids and their kids just keep getting shot down and they never do anything about it.
Well, I think they do try and do something about it.
Aren't they tired of being about the sacrificial family? Like, they're always involved and they're always getting killed off. Like, why can't it be somebody else that gets killed?
Well, I don't think that they're really all that happy about it. But I do think that Robert Kennedy, the reason Robert Kennedy was assassinated was he made it very clear that if he won the White House, he was going to reopen the investigation into John Kennedy's death. And I think Teddy Kennedy probably would have done the same thing, But, of course, Chappaquiddick came along, and that may have been an assassination attempt because there was some indication that he was run off the road rather than simply drove off the road. But because Mary Jo Kopechne had been in the back seat, that wrecked his chances to be president, and he was left alone after that.
Michael Rivero from WhatReallyHappened.com, 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. If you have any questions for Michael Rivero, is there any new John F. Kennedy stuff that's come out there? Any sort of smoking gun that's been popped out? I know that Dave Emery hates talking about the grassy knoll. He always says, get off the grassy knoll. Stop talking about the JFK assassination. You know, like, it's happened, it was a conspiracy, let's move on or whatever. But has there been any new stuff, any deathbed confessions, anything that you've come across on your website, whatreallyhappened.com?
I think the only thing that has come up new is that, once again, some audio experts have taken a good look at the Dallas Police, what's called the Dictabelt recording of the gunshots, and confirmed what the House Select Committee on Assassinations had concluded, that there were at least 7 gunshots, and 2 of them were too close together to have come from the same gun. This, of course, was disputed shortly after the House Select Committee on Assassinations came to that conclusion, but it's been reaffirmed by more recent computer analysis. But that really is the only thing that has come along on that case.
Michael Rivero of WhatReallyHappened.com, what about concentration camps? Concentration camps, namely in Canada, or just bordering in the United States of America, the SeaTac area. I saw a little posting, something about that there were concentration camps set up near the SeaTac airport, fully operational federal transfer center. What are these concentration camps that they talk about? Other concentration camps. Okanagan County borders Canada and is a site for a massive concentration camp capable of holding hundreds of thousands of people for slave labor. This is probably one of the locations that will be used to hold hardcore patriots who will be held captive for the rest of their lives. What do you know about concentration camps?
Well, it's not an issue I have focused on all that much. At least in one case, the so-called concentration camp turned out to be part of a training exercise facility. I have no doubt that the government has contingency plans in the event of national riots, and certainly with the way they're behaving right now, one cannot dismiss the possibility of some event sparking a tremendous amount of anger among the general population. The other situation to look at, of course, is that as the U.S. continues to make war on the Middle East, there may come a time when the U.S. will simply round up all the Arabic people that they can find and put them in these camps, much as they did to the Japanese in World War II.
Do you have anything to say about Paul Seleucci, who is the American ambassador to Canada? Do you know anything about Paul Seleucci?
No, I have really nothing to contribute on him. I'm sorry.
Caller, are you there?
I'm here, yeah.
Go ahead to Michael Rivero.
I wanted to know what really happened about Sasquatch. Do you have any information about that?
Yes, it's not something that I carry, that I deal with on my site, and I'm afraid that my last understanding is that the most famous movie film of Sasquatch was finally admitted to have been a hoax, so I think we kind of have to leave it there.
Did you hear about that, caller? There were zippers. There were zippers in the Sasquatch outfit.
I did hear about that, in fact, but I don't know that could really be proven because the frame is so small and the film is so out of focus that any foreign object or rectangular shape could be just about anything. I don't know that there's
any
truth to that.
Well, in this case, with regards to the Patterson film, we're dealing with a
confession. Aha, uh-huh, Michael! See, you are into Sasquatches. You were kind of denying it there, but you know about the existence of the Patterson film. Don't hold back, Michael. You're into Sasquatches.
The guy who made the costume, I think, basically admitted that he made the costume, and it was reported briefly and then dropped. Because it's much more interesting to talk about Sasquatch being real than to say, oh, yeah, he was just another fake. And I know all the people running those little tourism roadside attractions in the state of Washington are never going to forgive me for that one.
Well, it is true, but that may or may not be true. But if you want to examine the film, anyone, it is on display at the Vancouver Museum right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much, Lee. And what is the location of the Vancouver Museum and Archives?
That's 1100 Chestnut Street.
Well, thanks very much, Lee, and doot-doot-a-loot-doo. And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Winding up here, lastly, with Michael Rivero from WhatReallyHappened.com, and we have another caller. Caller, are you there? Hello, caller.
Oh, hi there.
Go ahead to Michael Rivero from whatreallyhappened.com. Have you been to whatreallyhappened.com, caller?
I checked out the site, had a good look at it, but there was a question that I kind of came into the show a bit late, and I may have, maybe it was covered already, but I do recall an interesting observation made about the Pentagon crash on 9/11, and I was wondering what your guest's take is on this as being, does he think that it was just a plane, or was it a missile? And secondly, there was only one surveillance camera showing what hit it, although it's kind of a little bit hard to tell. But the observation was made that the Pentagon has many surveillance cameras, and they've only offered one viewing from one camera. Is there any more information that he has on that?
Caller, you know what? Michael Rivero is going to burst your bubble, just like he burst the bubble on the caller before Lee, talking about the Sasquatch exhibit at Vancouver Museum and Archives, where he said that there were zippers on the Sasquatch outfit. Michael, go ahead and burst this guy's caller's bubble. I'm sorry, caller. Here it comes. Here's Michael's opinion.
Okay. The idea that it was anything but a passenger jet that hit the Pentagon is appears to be information that is being put out to trip up critics of the official story or those who are questioning to make them look silly. Photographs of the debris around the impact clearly show crumpled aluminum, airline seats, pieces of the airplane that have been identified. And there are really two issues you need to look at for the people who think that there was something other than an airplane that hit that building. First of all, only in cartoons do you have a cookie-cutter outline of one object as it crashes through another. If you really think about it, a passenger jet is not designed to plow through anything other than air. And compared to the reinforced walls of the Pentagon, it's about as fragile as a Christmas ornament. If you hurl that against bricks, that's about the same behavior that you'd get. The other issue is the theory that was something other than the passenger jet requires whoever is supposedly doing this substitution to take the passenger jet out and get rid of it someplace else and the people on board of it. Well, if you have to get rid of the jet and the people anyway, why not go ahead and crash them into the Pentagon? And finally, of course, a lot of people saw that plane headed toward the Pentagon. Not one person has come forward to say they saw it flying away.
How about in Pennsylvania? Was that jet shot down? Did it crash? What happened in Pennsylvania, and why is it so mysterious? Why can't they say they shot it down if they shot it down?
Well, that last one is really rather curious. First of all, there's no question that it was shot down. The wreckage came down in two sections miles apart, which indicates that it came apart up in the air, not down on the ground. There was one passenger who was on a sky phone and reported hearing an explosion and seeing smoke enter the cabin while the plane was still in the air. So I think it's pretty much established that the passenger jet was shot down. There were witnesses on the ground who saw what appeared to be a fighter tailing it for a while. As to why they didn't admit it, they may have just thought it was not going to be politically popular with at least a portion of of the American people who were going to say, well, can't you find some other way to have dealt with it rather than just shot it down. But I think push comes to shove, most Americans probably would have agreed with the decision.
Caller, any other questions for Michael Rivero from whatreallyhappened.com?
Well, I guess it just goes back, okay, it seems kind of clear that it might have just been a plane, but why hasn't the Pentagon shown any good footage of it if there was plenty of other surveillance cameras around?
Because I think the Pentagon is in on the idea that if they put out this idea that it was something other than a passenger jet, it's going to help, discourage people who are questioning the official story.
Okay.
And I think, you know, obviously if you're going to plant something like that, you do not allow out any evidence that is going to expose that as being a hoax.
Now, how hard is it for your website, whatreallyhappened.com, for you not to link to disinformation? Have you ever linked to disinformation by mistake, Michael Rivero?
Yes, I have. And this is why the message of the site is, you know, I don't want people to assume that I am, you know, infallible or honest or trustworthy. The whole point of the site is by showing contrasting information to what you are getting from the mainstream media is that people decide that their very best expert that they should be relying on is themselves. That they should be say, I am going to decide what is true and what is not true. And I'm not going to let this talking head or that talking head or this person over here tell me what to believe. I will choose for myself. And if everybody's doing that, you know, yes, people will make mistakes, but if everybody's deciding for themselves what's true, then you can't steer an entire nation into a misstep.
What did you link to that was disinformation, just out of curiosity?
Let's see. You're going to put me on the spot. I would have to say at the moment, I can't remember one off the top of my head. But, you know, I'm sure it has happened several times in the past.
Caller, any other questions lastly for Michael Rivero?
That's it for now, thanks.
Well, thanks so much, caller, and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Doot-doot.
And thank you very much, Michael Rivero, for calling into the Nardwuar Human Serviette radio show here in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Anything else you'd like to say to the people out there? Thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. You're definitely an energetic and enjoyable radio host, and I had fun.
And then also you want to tell the people, like, why should people care about whatreallyhappened.com? Or maybe they shouldn't care about whatreallyhappened.com. Why should people care?
Well, I'm going to go for that latter one. I don't necessarily feel people should care about whatreallyhappened.com itself, but what they should, they are living in a country whose government lies to them, because if your government is lying to you, then you cannot know the truth of anything that's going on in the world. And, you know, a government that's lying to you is not working in your own best interest.
Now, sorry to interrupt, but just quickly, just of all the links you do, how do you feel about the Canadian media? I mean, do you ever link to Canadian news sources? Are there any favorite news sources that you link to in Canada?
I link to the Toronto Star on a pretty regular basis. There's Antonia Zurbiasis, I believe is how her name is pronounced. I link to a lot of her stories. Yeah, there's a lot of Canadian media that I link to on a pretty regular basis.
Well, thanks so much, Michael. Keep on rocking in the free world, and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Doot-doo.
Rodney King and JFK, a whitewash, a hoodwink on the USA. Martin Luther King was murdered too, another cover-up to make a fool of you. Whitewash. Whitewash. You can't cover up what happened to Rodney King, and we know it's our eyes, we should have believed. JFK died while we believe November 22nd, 1963, in a crossfire of bullets while the cameras rolled and the people heard the shots from the grassy knoll. Now the Warren Commission gave their lengthy report. A lone nut did it all. They never got to court, but they couldn't cover up what we saw on TV. Now we know it's our eyes, we shouldn't believe. No, they couldn't cover up what we saw on TV. The JFK and Rodney King. You might be blind. Set aside the protested plan. The protest turned to riots in the maddening crowd. And what happened next? No one can be proud. Police say that Rodney was to blame. If you believe that, you've been whitewashed again. You can't cover up what we saw on TV. And we know it's our eyes, we should have believed. We know it's our eyes, we should have believed. When we saw JFK and Rodney King, you might be black, you might be poor white trash, yeah, yeah. Oh, they can't cover up what we saw on TV. We know it's our eyes, we should have believed. Burning and looting cost about 700 mil. It don't hold a candle to looting the SNLs. You talk about the murder and bodily harm, but you're still busy bragging about Desert Storm. And it happened in Grenada and Panama too. Ask the widows and the orphans about the whitewash they use.